Please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Dorothy from the Happy Destiny Home.
Yep. Hi, everyone.
Hello, Dorothy.
I am an alcoholic, and my name is Dorothy Hardy.
Hey, Dorothy.
And my sobriety date is, make sure I don't get it backwards, November 10th, 2007. I was part of a podcast once. And I announced to the hosts that my anniversary date was the other way around. And somebody goes, I thought your anniversary was this. And I was like, yeah, I was a little nervous. And, you know, that's what happens. So, yeah. Alcoholic, sobriety date. I do have a sponsor. And she knows she is my sponsor. I see her. Usually we try to get together once a week, and but we have worked the steps fully and completely. I do sponsor other women. I am fully into service, and I do have a home group, Happy Destiny, and that's how I'm here tonight. I could go into the drunk-a-log. I started drinking when I was 12, and you know, it is what it is. I was a drinker. I was alcoholic from the get-go. I was also a child of the 70s and 80s, where, you know, I was a latchkey kid, so it was a little easier to get alcohol and other substances, and misbehave. It was a little more accepted to drink at the table, kind of like French rules. Everyone drank at the table at dinner. It was what we did. And it's funny, it's because I was talking to my aunt last night, my aunt her name's Dorothy also. And you know, she goes, you know, I never realized you drank as much as you really drank. I thought you were just going to Al-Anon because of the situation you had at home. And I was like, yeah, I went there just to kind of get some heat off of me, but, you know, blame it on others. And that's how I worked, you know. It was always somebody else's fault that I was drinking. I told her, I remember when, let's see, I'd gotten kicked out of my mom's house, my dad's house, and my stepdad's house. And I was living with my grandparents, and I would steal my grandmother's Vantage cigarettes and my grandfather's Blatt's beer out of the outside, you know, in the outside the main kitchen refrigerator. He had that one. We grew up in Illinois and Michigan, and they had the outside refrigerator and the inside refrigerator. The outside refrigerator stored all beer. And I don't know if any of you have ever had Blatt's, but it's very cheap. And it looks like little barrels. And she told me I was braver than she was. So, you know. But that had been my MO growing up, was drinking when I could, trying to stay out of trouble, trying to not get caught. And I did pretty well. I was the oldest kid in my high school class, and in Illinois, the drinking age went up to 21 my senior year, and that was 83 to 84. And Wisconsin was still 18, and Milwaukee was only an hour and a half away. And so I would drive up to Wisconsin, go right over the border, and I would be the getter of all alcohol needed for all parties. So that's when I finally became popular. Mm-hmm. I was always a little weird. I hung out with like the theater people, or I wasn't an athlete. I did My athletic thing was badminton, which it is an Olympic sport, so therefore it is a sport.
Yeah.
Or I was the trainer that, like, if somebody got hurt on a football field, that person that ran out there and helped them come off the field and that sort of thing. I was always, like, athlete adjacent. And so it was really important to me to be popular because I don't know about any of you, but I never really felt very comfortable in my own skin. You know, I always felt I was just a little one step off from what everyone else. I felt like I didn't get the book that said, this is how life is and this is how you become successful. I thought I was the ugliest girl in class. I thought I was, you know, overweight. Mind you, it was, you know, the 70s and 80s, and women my size at the time were not considered heavy, but I had an issue with it. And it was all, you know, the self-talk. And I never really talked very well about myself to myself. And anytime anyone, I was the worst. No one could be as bad as I was to myself. Didn't have the greatest childhood, but it wasn't the worst either. I mean, my mom was married a grand total of now 4 times. Those were most, 3 of them were like up until my senior year of high school, and she just recently got remarried for the 4th time in 2020. And I ended up being her maid of honor at her wedding to her lovely husband, who is, you know, he's 82, he's getting ready to celebrate his 83rd birthday, and she's gonna be 78 in July. They're absolutely adorable, I love them. But I was the biggest pain in my mother's butt. And I swear, as I've gotten older, I've been telling her all the things I did when I was younger. And she's like, do you really have to tell me these things? I'm like, yeah, kinda. And she goes, some of them are funny. And I'm like, and she's like, some of them are, how did you survive? And I'm like, I don't know, I just got lucky, you know? Drunks and fools were watched out for. like I said, pretty much how I behaved. My father, he and my mom got divorced in 1970 when I was about 5, almost 6 years old. He was in the Navy, so therefore he was who I emulated, who I was gonna be like, who, you know, even though he was, come to find out, Peter Pan, nobody, anyone wants to emulate because he was a hot mess. He was also a drunk. And, you know, come to find out, he was really a mess. But I was going to join the Navy, just like he was in the Navy, and I was going to become the first female MCPON, and I was going to do all these things. And I graduated high school. My sister and I, who was 2 years, I waited until my sister graduated high school because she graduated the year after me. And we were going to go to boot camp the same day, all that stuff. And I ended up that I couldn't go because I had to go to court due to a rolling stop issue up in Wisconsin, and it was all a thing. So she went to boot camp without me. And I ended up eventually, I got a job, and in the course of time between 1984 to 1988, I had 3 fiancés and 1 husband. And 1988, I found my first husband out outside Great Lakes Naval Station. And, you know, we met, it was September, being the good alcoholics and addict that he was, and I was an alcoholic. We were married by November 18th, and I was not pregnant. And come to find out, he was on restriction. Didn't know. But we ended up, restriction is kind of like jail. It's not like so bad as prison, but you may get a couple months or so, for those of you who may not have been in the military. When he got out, we got stationed at Glenview, same place my dad was stationed when my mom and dad got divorced. And he decided he didn't like the Navy anymore, so he faked being crazy. He got out, come to find out he's from Ticonderoga, New York. They don't make pencils there. It's way north in New York. It's about 100 miles south of the Canadian border. It's an extremely, extremely small town, and I hated it because I grew up outside of Chicago, southwest suburbs of Chicago, and the mall, I think, was bigger than Ticonderoga. And I finally got to join the Navy because I was not staying in Ticonderoga. Went to boot camp. Now, mind you, I did get pregnant after my husband and I got married. We got married in November. He was born in September. Do the math. I did not get pregnant before we got married. I'm saying this because my stepfather accused me, number two, accused me of being pregnant. But I was still drinking. Like I said, there are other substances in my story. My first husband was also an addict in addition to being an alcoholic. And it was stuff that you sniffed. And if you sold it and got into it, you ended up in a lot of trouble. Usually at that time from Colombians. And that got to be a problem. So he was real happy that I got him out of Ticonderoga. Went to boot camp in Orlando. They don't have it for women there anymore. It's all at Great Lakes. And then I got to A school in Meridian. It is supposed to be a non-accompanied A school. And because I do what I want, as I do with everything, I brought my husband and my son with me. And I went, got done in 7 weeks, and the first thing I was told was, you're going to be on a ship. I was like, oh, geez, why am I going on a ship? Damn it, I'm sorry. You know, because I'm in the Navy, why am I going on a ship?
Yes.
And, you know, when you bring your spouse with you to an A school, and you get on your ship, and the first time it gets underway, and you never get seasick, ever, and then all of a sudden you're getting seasick. I went down to medical and said, I'm pregnant. And they said, no, you're not. After about 7 tests, they finally came to me and told me I was pregnant. Like, oh, you're pregnant. And I'm like, you think? And I got off my ship. And, you know, here's the story. I was pregnant with my daughter because I took my husband to my A school. I went to PSD subs. I was the first ever female stationed there because it's a submarine PSD and they're not used to women on subs. And pregnant, I fell down a couple times. They were freaking out, taking me to the hospital. After the third time falling down, they said, just call in to muster every morning, because we don't want you falling down anymore. I'm a tad bit of a klutz. So drinking does not help with that either. The day my daughter was born, I had a girlfriend that came to the hospital, and that's when they used to like IV in your arm and everything. They'd let you walk down outside to where the smoking area was, smoked a cigarette, and she bought a bottle of beer. And I drank a beer. Because I wasn't going to drink while I was pregnant with my daughter. I did with my son, but, you know, it is what it is. He's fine. So, after that, I drank a lot. I drank pretty steady. My husband found places to drink. He found places that had other substances. And we got to the point where when I was on my final ship, it was the USS Emery S. Land, because they kept me on sub-related things. And I decided I wasn't, I loved him. He was a great guy. He was the father of my children. We were, you know, pretty good together when we weren't drinking and using, which was very rare. I decided I didn't love him anymore. I was not in love with him. And it might be better if he just left. He said, okay, and he took the kids. And that was on Valentine's Day in 1993. Valentine's Day, 1993. And his mom and dad came down, got him, packed up the kids' stuff, and they all left and went away. And from Valentine's Day to July 8th, 1993, I did not have a day sober at all. Not even on duty days, because I was hungover or still drunk on duty days. And that was even under with an underway involved, a trip down to the Bahamas, my grandmother dying, all that stuff. And on July 8th, I got a message. My administrative officer, who I'd pissed off immensely a lot, came down to my birthing. We were in Boston for Fleet Week. And with my chief behind her, coming to my birthing as we were all getting ready for our last night in Boston, we were going to have a great time. She came in and told, with great joy on her face, mind you, that's how horrible I was, told me that my father-in-law had died. She had a Red Cross message in her hand, everything. And she just threw it at me, waiting for my reaction. And I read it, and my reaction was, it wasn't my effing father-in-law, it was my effing husband, you effing bitch. And she turned around and walked out. And I didn't see her the rest of the night. I had a leaf chip, bottom line, for how many ever days I needed it. A flight ready for me to go to New York. And went off, and my husband was dead. And that was interesting. My brother-in-law tried to beat me up because it was my fault that he died, because he was there. I don't blame him. I had a responsibility in that. My mother-in-law served me with papers 3 hours after the funeral that she was going to try to take custody of my children. I was a mess. I was like a wolf. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to raise my children. But I fought it and I won. And to celebrate, I got a DWAI, which is driving while ability impaired. I call it a DUI light, because they said it was because of my husband's death. I shouldn't have been driving. Never mind the fact that I think I blew a point two. And they just said ability impaired because, you know, my husband had just died. So I was given that, you know, drunks and fools were looked out for. Came home. My sister moved in with me because my kids weren't going to be raised by the wolf. That was me. And for 2 years again, not a day that I was sober. Got to the point where my kids, they saw that I had an empty beer, went to the refrigerator and went and got me a new one. Mm-hmm. On February 28th, 1995, I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember a place called Knickerbocker's in Norfolk. They used to have quarter draft nights on Mondays. And if you had a roll of quarters, you were set. And that Monday night, I had a roll of quarters. And I was set. Hooked up with some guys from my ship, some girls and guys from my ship. And my sister at the time was living with me, so it wasn't going to be like that irresponsible and leave my kids by themselves. I went out. I was out until 6 o'clock the next morning. Mind you, I had duty that day. Mm-hmm. And when I walked in the door, my little girl, who was just over 3 years old, was standing at the bottom of the stairs. I lived in housing, mind you, too. And she was standing at the bottom of the stairs and said, "Mommy, where you been?" It's quite the kick in the pants. I went to the ship, and I became a self-referral. You know what a self-referral is? Somebody who tells on themselves before they get caught. And I went to ARC at the time. That was before SARP. ARC was when it was its own department in the Navy. And I spent 5 weeks instead of the customary at that time, 4 weeks, because I needed a little extra encouragement for my recovery. And while I was there, I picked up another fiance. And, you know, they said, if you don't stay sober for a year, you will be kicked out. Now, mind you, I am now a single mother with two children. I needed a job that had benefits and everything. So I did not drink. I was, and some people have heard me say this, I was in sobriety for 10 years. 1996, I met this super, super cool guy. Met him in a meeting. He was sitting across from me. I thought he was pretty hot. He thought I was pretty good looking. And I was just the right amount of hot mess that he could save. And he came and fixed my sink that first night. And we have been together now for 28 years. We stayed sober together. Well, no, sorry. We did not drink until 2005. He was in April, I was in November. I was just too scared to go out with him. And let me just tell you, those 10 years were miserable. Mm-hmm. Because this is my story, I had a sponsor while I was in ARC. I did my autobiography, which was because I'd done the first two steps. And then my autobiography, well, I did the first three steps. Autobiography was the fourth step. The fifth step was when I mailed it to her. And then sixth step, I told her what was wrong with me. So therefore, six and seven, eight. I didn't need to do that. I already shared my fourth step with that woman, never talked to her again. And what, you know, whatever. So, didn't really have a sponsor, didn't even really work the steps. Had a home group and I could learn the language. I was talking the talk, but not walking it. Mm-hmm. I did not know what any of those signs meant. I did not know what service was, none of that stuff. Kenny went out before me, and I was very mad. that he didn't take me with him. When I finally worked up the nerve, I asked him if he went out and drank. He said yes. And I said, okay, I'm going out and I'm drinking too. Because I was just that miserable. And I wanted to go to Papa's Pub. And he said, you are too white bread for that. And so he took me to the Village Inn. So that's where we went. And I had a rum and coke. And then I had two. Then we went home. And we were like, oh, we'll just drink in the garage. Mind you, it was November. Okay. We'll just drink in the garage. And then it started getting cold. And then we're like, well, it's our house. We can drink in our own house. Mind you, we had our four children still living with us who went through the hell that was us. And then we told our kids, we're drinking again, but we're older and wiser. And if you happen to notice anything, let us know. That did not work out very well. And by 2 weeks, we were, you know, back to the races. And that was 2 years of hiding from people in the grocery stores that we knew from AA. Kenny and I both have this tattoo on our arm. It's our wedding band, actually. It's got an NA and an AA symbol on it. I had to wear shirts this long for 2 years because I didn't want anyone to see it. Got a tattoo on my leg. Long pants, forever. It's funny how hard I worked to make sure nobody knew I was previously in AA when I was drinking. So finally, let me just tell you, you know that bottom people talk about? Whatever that bottom is that gets you into these rooms, it's going to be the one. I mean, I can't say what it is like for somebody else. All I can say is what it was like for me. I couldn't justify my own bad behavior anymore. I couldn't say, it's okay, I'm just going to do this one thing and it's okay because nobody's going to know about it. The thing is, I was going to know about it. And what's funny is, the day I got sober, I hadn't even had a drink that whole day. I just felt, you know, that incomprehensible demoralization? That's what I was feeling from the time I woke up that morning to the time I went to the Easy Does It at the noon meeting. And people saw me, and they're like, we thought she was still in AA. Why is she picking up a white chip? How long has it been? I was like, 2 years. And like the snot slinging, the tears. I was wearing mascara, so I looked like a raccoon. And it was just, I may have been crying and snotting and all that stuff, but I felt like I was home. I was like, these are my people. And that was November the 10th, 2007. Now, mind you, it took me about 3 months to find a sponsor. And that sponsor got me through the first three steps. And it was amazing. And I got this service fairly quickly, too, because those of you who have had Pete Winter or Kenny come speak, you've probably heard this story, too, but you're going to hear it from my perspective. We were all part of the same home group. We're littermates, Kenny, Pete, and I. And we're all within a month of each other with our sobriety dates. And we started going to this meeting called Caring and Sharing in Virginia Beach every Sunday. And what we liked about it was an ask it basket meeting. So, you know, throw questions in there, somebody would answer, and you could talk more than once, which for egomaniacs like us. That was perfect. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was running that meeting, he had been a home group of one for almost 20 years.
Ooh.
Kept the meeting running, though. And Carlos, who was the DCM of 32 at the time, you remember him, he one night was like, "You three, come here." And we're like, "Oh, well." Now, mind you, we're about 4 months, 5 months sober at this point. And we're like, "Okay." And he said, "This is your, do you guys have a home group yet?" And we're like, "No." And he's like, "Well, this is your home group now. You are responsible. You pick and choose which one of you is the GSR, which one of you is the IR, which one of you is the chairperson, secretary, treasurer." And he gave us a briefcase with like almost $700 in it, the keys, and said, "Here you go." And so we rotated like those responsibilities. And because it was just the three of us at the time, we rotated like every 9 months because we didn't want to get burned out. And that's how we got introduced to service work. My first was intergroup. And I got asked to be the steering committee secretary at a year sober. And I was like, okay. Not realizing I was supposed to have maybe 2 years, but you know, you do what you gotta do. And I stayed sober. And when the times were going on where I was like, screw AA, I had a service commitment. So that meant I stayed sober. Now, mind you, at 6 months sober, Kenny had come home from a meeting. He went to Roosevelt Garden every week because we were living in Norfolk at the time. And he said, "Hey, I think I found that lady who was your sponsor when you were in ARC." And I was like, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah, I think I found her." And I went there, and it was her. And I was like, "Wow, she's still sober. She must be really old. And if I told her that now, she'd probably kick my butt. But she's got like almost 50 years now." But she was there. And I asked her if she remembered me, and she said yes. And I asked her, I said, "Will you be my sponsor again?" She goes, "Do you have a sponsor now?" And I said, "Yes." And she goes, "Well, you have to tell that sponsor you found a new sponsor." So that took about 3 months. And then I finally did that. And she and me worked the steps completely. And at about a year sober, I was driving her to a meeting because some people told me that when you're being sponsored by somebody with a lot of time, you're supposed to do things for them, like drive from the meetings, you know, do things like that, clean their house. I don't know. Just anything to keep you sober. And so I was driving her to a meeting, and we were talking. I said, "Oh, you remember when I mailed you my autobiography?" And she said, "You know, I was about a year sober." And she goes, "I've been meaning to talk to you about that." And I'm like, "What?" Now, mind you, my autobiography when I was at ARC, that was like everything, all the things. And I was not a well-behaved woman back in the day. And I was like, "Oh yeah, what about it?" She said, "I never got that." And you know what, that was a lesson in acceptance. Because you know what, most people knew what I was doing anyway. And I just had to say, okay, it is what it is. That's been my new phrase lately, is it is what it is. So, yeah, somebody's gonna get it someday, and I don't know, you know. Good thing I don't live where I lived then. So, Like I said, I've done all the, I've worked all the steps, and I worked them. I didn't just do them. I've worked them a couple times now. I have been in service practically since I got sober. I've been fortunate to be part of the intergroup side, and part of, so I've been part of local service, and I've been part of general service. I have been, you know, sometimes I've been surprised, like when I was in GSR, somebody goes, I nominate Dorothy to be the secretary. And I went, huh? I don't know what that entails. And I was, well, mind you, there was nobody running against me. So I got it. Mm-hmm. I've been ABCM, DCM. I've worked at, done it at the area level. And if I'm never asked to be a part of the area again, I'll still go because I'm just that much of a nerd. Kenny and I moved out here to Suffolk in 2021. And I'm going to tell you, this is the best thing that happened to my recovery. Y'all have got some really good AA out here. I mean, I'm not saying that Norfolk's bad or anything. I'm just saying that you've got good AA out here. And it Jumpstart started my program again. I got a new sponsor because even though it's 20 miles, I did have to go through a tunnel. So that's considered, you know, crossing borders. And I did get a new sponsor. And that's why I did the steps with again, because she said we're gonna do the steps again. I was like, okay. But she has walked me through some major life changes, like in reference to my kids and even my husband. And my home group members know about this. My mother, and I had a kind of a meltdown at the beginning of May, but my mother is dying of cancer right now. And at first, I had my meltdown at my home group where I felt it was safe to do so because that's my home group and those are my family members too. And they have supported me. And, you know, I went and visited my mom. And at first she was kind of sassy and cranky about it all. And now she thinks she's had surgery and she needs a walker because she's waiting on physical therapy to start. And, you know, if that's what gets her through this, I am perfectly happy. It's not lying. It's just easing her pain and giving her comfort. And this program is what taught me that, you know? The old guys at my home group, they're the ones who told me that it's okay, it's not lying. It's just being there and being of service, because that's what my job is now, to be of service and make it easier for people to like me and love me. Some days I'm really good at it, some days I really suck at it. Last week, my daughter and I got into a yelling match at her house. Mind you, my daughter is now 32. That little girl who was 3 years old, she is 32 with children of her own, got in a yelling match at her front door. And she's like, you know what? This is my house and it's not acceptable for you to do this in my house. And I went, that is true. I'm not her boss anymore. Not that I was anyway. But this program has taught me about boundaries, about being kind to myself and others, about taking responsibility for my own actions and not taking responsibility for others' actions. And it's shown me just to, like I said, be kinder and gentler to the world and myself. And you know what? I didn't prepare anything. I didn't write anything down because I don't do that. So that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Dorothy. You want to do 5 minutes on step six?
Oh, boy, that's appropriate. Yeah, sure.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
No problem.
Hey, I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic.
No, Mike.
Step six. So this is the backfill moment, right? When we hit this little thing, we get to talk about it. So instead of talking about it from some perspective of somebody that actually does it well, I'll talk about it from a perspective of somebody who seems to have struggled with it mightily. Step six, being completely willing of these defects. I've actually been struggling quite a bit with this one lately. talking with my sponsor quite a bit. I've done six, and I've done seven. But like Dorothy said, I think four was a a confessional. Five was something I did so that I could get it off my chest to someone else to have the point of view to point out the character defects that represent themselves. At some point, it seemed like when I'd gotten through to five and to six and to seven, it moved really quickly. And it was almost like I had skipped over six. It was a very quick conversation. Moved into seven to being completely willing to give it to God. And I said it, and I did it, and I did a seven-step prayer. And it didn't really happen that way. Looking back on it, my sponsor and I had just gotten back together here in the last couple of weeks because I've been struggling with a bunch of stuff. And the kind of things that those character defects that come out of five and being able to recognize those, I could say them, but I don't think that I could actually grab them. I don't think that I actually accepted what they were. And eventually ended up finding myself, because I hadn't given them completely to God in seven, that I ended up reverting right back to them, which was really, really confusing. I've been sober for about 18 months now, right at 18 months. Hit a moment where, I actually had this conversation with my sponsor this morning. I said, I just can't figure out. There's the first one. So that prompted the first laugh from my sponsor. I just can't figure out why every time I feel like I get my head above water, it feels like another toe comes and pushes it back down. And there was the second laugh. So clearly in my program, I've had an issue with six and seven. So I've spent the last 2 weeks in the 12 and 12 back working through six and seven, pulling out the defectometer. All right, so my sponsor, when we go through this step four, we tell the thing, we get through five, and he's making notes the whole way. And I'm like, oh yeah, I thought this was just gonna be, I just get to tell you. I was like, man, what a time I gave up on God. I probably should have gone to see a priest at that point. But pulls out this nice little piece of paper and says, hey man, look at all this stuff. This is pretty cool, man. Check this out. Look, this is where you're screwed up. This is what this is. And of course, we follow the guide of the seven deadly sins, and ego and pride are all right there. I can say them, and I can see them, and I'm starting to recognize them. But I think going back through this and getting wobbly, right? So I didn't go back out, but I got real wobbly for about 3 weeks. And going back through six and seven, taking a step backward, and really getting into that again, I think really helped get back on track. I could see where my pride and my ego were there, but there were things like the economic insecurities, I'm not gonna go with sloth, but pride and ego are just consistent with me. And I thought that I had them done. I thought that I had it mastered. So like I started this, I said the seven-step prayer. Matter of fact, I said it pretty much every day for about 4 months. And it still was just a bunch of words because I didn't really get anchored in six before I went to the next one. Now, to my sponsor's credit, it was fantastic because he let me wobble. I know he'd seen it. I mean, he's got about 30 plus years of sobriety and he's seen a couple fools do this thing and do the wobble game. But he waited for me to bring it up again, which step five, step six. Being able to see those things again and get back in the program. So that's all I got on step six. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing.
So our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers rent and supplies. The rest is given to the Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and the General Services Office. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
We have a speaker meeting every Friday at 8 p.m. You guys are at it right now. And we have, well, thank you first and foremost, Dorothy, for coming and sharing your story. Sorry, I'm pulling it up. I was not ready. Let's see here. We have an awesome lineup of speakers from the Happy Destiny Group, and next week is going to be Janice sharing her experience, strength, and hope. So if you can and would like to, please come out and support her. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Please.
Tomorrow's Saturday of service out in the Norfolk, Virginia Beach Line area at Bayside Presbyterian. It starts at 11. It's where we get the information from intergroup. They do their own reports, the committee chairs, and the area, Virginia area delegate will be giving his report back from the General Service Conference that he went to in April. So.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other announcements? Okay, I've asked a friend to present the chips.
Good evening. How's it going, everybody? My name's Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Dave.
We have a chip system at this home group that denotes various lengths of sobriety that you say you have. The first chip, if you're not sure what this is, it's probably for you. It's a white chip. Give up the fight, pick up a white surrender chip. Any takers? I'll put it to the side. It's a popular chip at this home group. It's an orange chip for 30 days. Orange, you glad you got 30 days?
Yeah.
Good one. All right, put that back. This one looks popular because it's our last one. Burgundy for 60 days. I don't even remember handing these out, to be honest. I just don't know how we're so low. Any takers? All right. Let's see here. Red chip for 90. Blue chip for 6 months. Green for 9 months. And then we have a yellow chip for a year or more from another home group. And then if you join this home group, we got some pretty sweet, I guess they're metal, coated in something, medallions. It's probably not. And then last time for the white chip, any takers? All right, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for chipping. It's probably brass.
Yeah, probably. Definitely not copper.
So we at the End of Action Group believe that one of the important keys to long-term contented sobriety is effective sponsorship. If anyone here tonight needs a sponsor, please see me after the meeting and we'll make sure you have one tonight. End of Action is a home group. If anyone here tonight is looking for a group to join, we welcome you here.
We got a few spots open. These chairs open are actually open positions, so.
Lots open.
One, two, three.
And for those of you who will, please join me in saying the Lord's Prayer.